This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, any place, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Ow. Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Ooh. Ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy rinse-free whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for two shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White. A whiter smile without the rinse.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the pod. We are pre-match for the Leicester game. I'm standing with my good friend and friend of the show, Alan. Hello, Alan.
Hi, yeah. How you doing, Russ?
Yeah, not too bad. Looking forward to the game.
Oh, yes. It's going to be a good game, I reckon.
Yeah.
Another 3 points, hopefully.
Another great event, hopefully. Yeah, hopefully there's another one coming up soon. Your niece is getting married, isn't she?
Absolutely.
Quite soon.
Next Saturday,
and,
yeah.
We've got her other half to be, well, other half and husband to be with us, who's over from the States for the wedding on account of the fact he's from the States. San Francisco, to be exact, I believe. Welcome to the podcast, Ted.
Oh, thank you. Excited to be here.
Excellent. I see you've got an Albion scarf on. Looks like we might be turning you to the way of the seagull. Would that be possibly the case?
I think that is a very fair statement, yes. I'm a supporter, yes.
Excellent. I know you told me this before we started recording, but you had a bit of an incident with your first Albion game, which was the only Albion game so far, I think. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah. It was at Chelsea.
Chelsea away, which is the last season's game, isn't it, where they got the late equaliser. You missed it. Explain very briefly why and how.
So Alan was kind enough to get me and my future father-in-law, Hugh, a ticket to the match. So we were there. I asked for his daughter's hand in marriage right before the match. We walk in, we're having a great time, we're enjoying
Fantastic.
The game. Missed the equalizer because her dad slipped and fell and dislocated his finger, so I ended up having to take him to the hospital.
Yeah, rather painful story. Missing the equalizer wasn't the only bit of pain involved in that story. So how come you've hooked up with your missus? Did you meet her over there?
We met in San Francisco through a mutual friend. We actually met 6 years ago at a dinner party. We were both dating other people at the time, and I lived in Indiana at the time, not California. And we ended up re-meeting during COVID.
Yeah.
They call them a social circle in San Francisco. They literally spray painted circles in the parks. I show up to the park day with some friends, and they put my seat right next to her. So we ended up having a chat and hit it off, and here we are about 2 years later getting married.
There we go, brilliant. Is she an Albion fan by any chance?
We'll make her one.
That's the next task. That's the work
on.
I know, obviously, you're kind of new to it with the Albion, but have you got any predictions for today? How do you see it going?
I think it's when I'm going to go 2-1.
2-1 to the Albion?
2-Albion. Yeah.
Nice, I like that. I've gone 2-0. I haven't been getting them right recently, but that doesn't bode well. So you can mark off 2-0 on the score sheet. Alan, any thoughts?
Well, I'm hoping we're going to get a clean sheet, so something like 2-0 or maybe even possibly 3-0. I mean, I'm really optimistic. I'm just... That's the way I am at the moment.
Nice.
Yep.
I like it, yeah. We've done well with clean sheets. We haven't conceded many. Two of the ones we have done, we've scored them for them, really, haven't we? So if we can avoid that, it'll be good.
Just got to keep Mr. Vardy under control and Barnes and Madison. I assume they're playing. I haven't seen the team sheet yet, but they're the dangerous players. So,
excellent. And back to Ted just to finish. In the States, it's getting really popular now, Premier League football. I've noticed a larger number of fans are picking up and supporting the not big six, traditional big six as well, which is good to see. And that's meant quite a few stateside and American-born Albion fans now. Obviously, you've been pretty much the latest, I think. How has it been? Have you been able to catch games? Have you been watching much
Yeah, it's nice.
You can see all the games, can't you?
Yeah, thankfully for Peacock, a little bit of an advert for them. But, through that, paying $5 a month, you can get all the Premier League matches now, which is amazing. It's incredible.
And are you going to be, once you got married, are you staying over here or over there?
America, back over there. Back
so,
the States, yeah.
So you won't be able to get to see too many live games. At least you can follow week to week.
This is amazing. I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Maybe we'll get you back on the pod. Well, probably after the game, we'll have a quick word if you're around for having beers afterwards. But in the future as well, maybe. We'll hear from you again. Excellent. Ted, enjoy it, and welcome to the club.
All right, thanks.
Up the Albion.
Up the Albion. Okay, it's post-match. We've won the game 5-2. Some may argue that should be 6-2. I haven't seen it back. Definitely should have been at least that. Fantastic game. I'm with Chris Smith, friend of John, who's a friend of the show. Welcome to the podcast for your debut, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Enjoyed yourself.
It's
been great, hasn't it?
It's been a cracking game.
Yep, you are a West Ham Upper regular as well. Same as me.
Yes.
We had a chat in the ground, and pretty good, wasn't it? Pretty good stuff. Four different scorers. Ali Mack's got a few goals now already.
Yep.
Our strikers have still not scored any goals, but we don't care. That could go on like that all season for a week here if we keep winning games.
We scored from a direct free kick as well, which is unusual for us and great news. McAllister man of the match for me.
Yeah, agreed.
But then that could have been anyone across the midfield. Castillo was awesome.
Yep.
March was also very good in the first half. Yep. Trossard struggled a bit in the first half, came into it and much more in the second half. Great game.
Really was. And when he showed up for that free kick for the 5-2, I was thinking for about 10-15 minutes, this is going to finish with 5. We're definitely going to get another one. I just felt we were. And as he shaped up, I thought he's going to score this.
Definitely. For me, that was the way he stood over ball. His intent, his body language was just incredibly positive. It was an incredibly decisive moment for McAllister. I think, we've lacked a player that maximises goals from free kicks. Yeah. We need to get that into our side to push on, to take advantage of when we get set pieces. And he's the man that's got to do that, got to push on. I think he'll be great.
Yeah.
Now he's going to add that to his game. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
And it'll be even better when he's playing in his actual position.
Yeah. Well, this is the beauty, isn't it? We were saying just off air, we signed Billy Gilmore, a lot of people moaning about not getting a striker in, but actually by signing Gilmore, we've opened up options in midfield, which allows players to play in more advantageous positions that they would be more comfortable in or more effective in. And we could go all season without a striker scoring.
There's also, McAllister has been very good in his position he's currently playing in.
Yeah.
He's like, how good is he going to be when he's back playing as number 10? He's our quickest player at turning the ball over and building straight from the start. Yeah. He's our fastest player for that. So get him back playing just behind the front man again, and he'll be turning the ball over, winning the ball back inside the opposition's third, and just making even more chances. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
That incision and that directness and that quickness of movement, that makes the difference. Along with, as you said, a front man running the line and drawing players away, that's perfect. And we've got people that can finish. McAllister can finish. Trossard can finish. Obviously, Welbeck can, but he hasn't done this season.
We do need to test the keeper today. A thing for me was there was more goals in that game if we'd tested their keeper more.
Yeah.
There's a weak keeper, poor keeper, not a Premiership level keeper at all. I'm amazed that they've still got him.
Yeah.
And really, we should have tested him a lot more than we actually did. I think that's probably my only one.
Yeah,
if I was really to pick holes and to be very picky about that game, we didn't test their keeper enough.
Yeah.
But he did match for us in the end. Well deserved 5-2 winners. So.
Yeah, there we go. Chris, it's been a pleasure to have you on for the first time. We'll get you back on, I'm sure, at some point. Thanks. Enjoy your trip back. I'm sure you will be going home with a smile.
Oh, yes, indeed. I'll see you next time. Enjoy.
Cheers. Okay, so we now switch to our pre-match guys, Ted and Alan. We've got to go to you first, Ted. You've made your home debut today, so to speak. It's been a pretty boring game, isn't it? Only the 7 goals, maybe should have been 8 or 10 or whatever. How did you find that?
It was amazing. It definitely should have been 6-2.
Yeah?
Should have been 6-2.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. As if it wasn't already the case, you sold on the club now. That's got to have made it even more firmed up, hasn't it?
It was incredible, yeah. It was the crowd was great, everything was great. Just a beautiful stadium.
Yeah, it's great. And we played brilliantly, didn't we? So many good attacking moves. So much more, even, we could have done from the game. And yet we did plenty.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, we could have had quite a few more goals. My prediction of a clean sheet kind of went out the window pretty quickly, which is unbelievable.
And not in the way we would have liked.
No. But it's funny. You get those situations where someone could have scored really, really early on, but it usually fizzles out and things settle down. But this time we actually went in. But we came back and that was really excellent.
Yeah.
There's some fantastic chances. March really should have scored a few goals.
Yeah.
Again, he's. He should have had some good chances and he's left him really.
Which still lacking the finishing.
But, having said that, he did play particularly well. But McAllister, what a strike for the first goal.
Fantastic. And the irony is, I mean, Solly did go off on the score sheet at last, but then maybe he hasn't. Apparently it's going down as an own goal.
I'm not sure. I'm really saying, but I've got a feeling he might have headed it onto the post and it bounced off and it...
Yeah,
the defenders and went in. So,
I think that's what happened.
Yeah,
according to someone telling me about Sky, they said it was it was the case.
Yeah.
However, great stuff. And it looks like there's a goal for Arsenal away at Man United as we're talking. Yeah. That seems to be popular too.
Yeah, Martinez.
Interesting, actually. Yes, that goal's gone in. Chatting to Chris, who I had on just now on the pod, he's gone off, but he was saying, is there a team better than us at the moment? You probably would have to argue Arsenal, because they've got a 100% record, and it looks like they might carry on with it.
Yeah, true.
Let's take them out of the equation. Is there anyone else better than us at the moment?
We are playing really well. Yeah. But you can't, it's not luck, it really is.
Yeah, I mean,
we've really got to enjoy this time.
Exactly.
I know it's been said so many times, but we've really got to enjoy
it. We know
this
it won't last forever, but we can expect and hope and dream of a new best ever finish.
Yeah.
I think we're certainly capable of finishing above 9.
Yeah.
I know you said it tongue in cheek, but our title rivals, Man City, draw points.
Yeah.
and Liverpool as well, if they're in the title race at all. Maybe, you know, if they keep screwing up. Who knows?
But I think what's quite nice, I mean, we shouldn't really get too hung up by what the media and what the pundits say, because they talk bollocks most of the time anyway.
Yeah.
But I think things are going to start shifting now, because they are going to start talking about Brighton as being serious team.
Yeah.
It's not just the usual kind of yes, Brighton. No, isn't Potter really good?
Yeah, are they doing well?
They've actually maybe started to focus on some of the players. So I'd imagine the big players like McAllister is going to get a really good...
Because we've got some seriously good talent in this team. Yeah. Throughout the squad, Sanchez, minus his occasional faux pas. Donkey, look at Casado, McAllister, Trossard, who's getting a greater deal of consistency, which will catch the attention. Welbeck up front. A number of other players as well could come into this as being at that level where they are seriously good players.
Yeah.
Top half of table players. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting actually. I don't know if you noticed with Trossard, because in the Leeds game, he had a few chances and he had to try and get back onto his right foot, but this time he actually took it with his left straight away.
Yeah.
Which went in the goal.
Yeah.
So, you know, he learned something from that.
Yeah.
He executed it well and it went in. Fantastic goal. Garcia's goal was class.
I'm surprised he didn't take it himself.
And I would imagine what's happening in South America, sports television now.
They're all watching that going.
McAllister,
McAllister again. Yeah.
Top of the league. Well, top four.
And we've still got Sarmiento to come back, haven't we?
Yeah.
It's incredible talent.
I think Paul Barber should open a club shop in South America, maybe one in Rio de Janeiro,
in Japan, because he'll be popping up once.
Well,
he didn't get on today, Mr. Mabba. He's a cracking player as well. Another good talent. So it's We are now going to start to get recognised for being, as you said, solidly very good team rather than just a team with flourishes. Speaking of flourishes, Pascal Gross, a couple of great bits of skill today.
Oh,
he did his turn. He did some sort of like a drag over thing as well at one point to the side, which kept a move going in absolute style.
And he had a few good shots on target as well. So.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, it could have been a lot more. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's really good.
Really could have been. Anyway, Alan, always a pleasure, sir.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Speak to you next time.
Up the Albion.
Right, next up, they're about to go, so I'm going to grab a quick word with them. Ahmed and Alison, welcome back to the pod, and yet another glorious win for the Albion. Ahmed, how was that for you?
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I predicted a 5-2 win.
That wasn't before the actual kickoff. I went 9-2 in the middle, he did predict it.
Well, I did, but it was 4-2 because I thought we'd get out of the goal. Yeah. And what a goal that was.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Man of the match, was he?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I think he should have been man of the match.
It would have been a hat trick as well, wouldn't it? If it wasn't for the disallowed goal. Gutted.
What a fantastic goal the disallowed one was.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. I missed it, actually. I was in the loo, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. However.
Yeah. I wasn't worried about the scoreline, because I thought we were going to score more, but it was just what a shame that didn't stand for him, and, could have been our goal of the month.
Any goal like that deserves to be a goal, doesn't it?
Just,
if it's that good, you should almost disregard the rules. Anyway, what a great game. I should note, I've been drinking water today and lemonade and lime. I've had no alcohol.
It looks like vodka.
it does look like vodka. You're right, it does. Am I going to have to stay teetotal at games? Is this going to be... If I end up doing this again once more and we have as good a performance again, that might be it for me.
I think you should go
teetotal.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. Anyway, great to catch up with you guys. See you at the next
you
one.
Too.
Cheers. And so we turn our attentions now to the gent who hasn't been on for a while. Welcome back to the podcast, Raymond. I suppose you quite enjoyed yourself today.
Well, when I wake up tomorrow Sunday morning, Russell, I'm going to realise that this was all a dream. And it's good to say for you, because two things don't happen. Under Potter, we don't score 5 goals at home. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
That's the first time I think we scored 5 goals in the Premier League.
I think you're right,
I thought it was probably under Potter our best attacking performance.
Yeah.
With the possible exceptions of the second half against Man City.
Oh, and the Man United game.
And
as well.
The first part of the Man U game.
Last season. Yeah.
But at Man U, although we won 4-0, it wouldn't have flattered Man U if it had been 4-2. But this, I think, were all round excellent. 4 different scorers. McAllister could possibly, when one's seen it replayed, should have had a hat trick.
Yeah.
But for the goal disallowed.
Yeah.
I noticed that Graham Potter said, quoted as saying, it's not so much about scoring goals, football, but scoring one more goal than the opposition. So he's obviously interpreted that, meaning if you win 1-0, that's enough. It can be interpreted as Kevin Keegan did. It doesn't matter if you score 5 goals, if the opposition have scored 4.
Yeah.
So, if you score 10 or 11 goals every game, for the sake of argument, you're probably going to win most games.
I bloody hope we win every game if we score 10 or 11.
Well, we could have had... It wouldn't have flattered us if we'd scored about 8.
No, not at all.
I mean, Welbeck's shot, when he won the ball off the keeper...
Yeah.
And then got it and had to chip over him.
Yeah.
If he'd been 4 foot further away from the goal, that would have been under the bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And would have been a fantastic
finish. I think Wepu, when he shot a goal, I mean, it's on target with power, fair play, but he could have squared that could have been maybe a goal. Gross had a good shot from range, a couple of them, especially in the second half.
I mean, why Wepu went for that? I mean,
his
angle was impossible.
Yeah.
It was almost impossible to get it in for where he shot.
Yeah,
about a 5% angle to
Welbeck nearly scored from wide on the left. The loop ball that just hit the back of the crossbar and onto the net.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
That's that one. Yeah,
that's that one. But I mean, I think Welbeck's actually the only disappointing thing is I hope he'd score a goal, because at this rate he ain't going to score a goal in the first half of the season.
Yeah,
it won't matter if we're scoring goals.
Yeah.
Enough goals. But
exactly. If he stays fit all season and doesn't score a single goal, I'd be happy if we carry on doing what we did today in that regard.
Well, at the moment, 11 goals, 6 games,
That's great.
That's nearly two goals a game. If we continue scoring at that rate, we'll do very well.
We'll be getting more than 2 points a game.
If I could go back to something I posted on the Seoul website the other day. Can you actually answer two questions? Firstly, why does Webster, when he gets the ball, do three things? Firstly, he waits till he's got the ball to start even thinking about what he's going to do with it. Secondly, he tends to ignore people in the space outside him. As exemplified by his brilliant cross-field pass to the Leicester player, leading directly to that second goal. And thirdly, why does he actually slow the tempo down all the time?
You've got an issue with this, haven't you? You mentioned before.
No, he waits till the ball comes.
As
a driving instructor, Russell, you will know that you have to anticipate what you're going to do. Webster isn't looking to see what's on when the ball is coming towards him. He's waiting for the ball gets to him.
So there's some coaching back into it there, I think. Because when we move the ball quicker, we're definitely better, we're effective, we're a passing team. Players like McAllister have got more of a directness to them, haven't they, in terms of moving the ball quickly and looking at what's available.
I don't mind it going across and back. As long as when we do start going, we go with pace.
That's it.
What last season when we were going forward, we weren't going forward with pace. Today, when we made that decisive move, we move with pace. And the first 2 minutes, we were poor because we weren't concentrating. And arguably, the first sort of few minutes of the second half, other than the disallowed goal, we sort of stood back a bit. But then we got ourselves back on the front foot, got our confidence back, got the third goal, got the fourth goal. But we always, somehow the balance isn't quite right. In the central midfield. And I said, the fact that McAllister could have had a hat trick, I think, is that when he's playing deeper, all his attributes, it's we're actually losing something further forward.
We're saying that by bringing Billy Gilmour in, people wanted a striker, but actually, I know it's still a matter of keeping Welbeck fit, but Gilmour does release up options of greater flexibility with options in midfield. It allows McAllister to play further forward rather than being part of a double pivot.
Gilmour deeper, you can see though, and McAllister able to almost be box to box.
And drop in when they need to, rather than sit in.
Because Casido is having to play quite centrally. And that's leaving a big space on the left. Trossard's clearly being asked to not drop back too much. Defensively, so that he's available upfield. And I still feel that the Bissouma before he went to Spurs were missing because of his injection and pace and central midfield. And I actually think he's missing Cucurella's.
Well,
the amount of ground he covers on the left. It's not and defensive and his anticipation in defence. When there are problems on our right flank, Cucurella would anticipate him come centrally. The number of times he headed off problems by his anticipation.
It's a different set out, you know, one team to another. They've got different dynamics and different shapes based on the players they've got. And I think we're looking great with what we've got.
I think going forward. And I was pleased to see Mark scored, Casido scored, obviously McAllister got two, Trossard got another one. So it's looking good. I think he's trying to eight Man City. I'm not sure we've quite got the class on that.
Well, no, we don't have the money for that, but we're not doing badly, are we?
No, but I mean, I think if you go as Graham does for technical players, then I think, you know, the chances are, and you've got the sort of structure that you can get it. So it's, I think it's encouraging. And I think that we were still at that player short. And I don't know if you noticed, but Brereton Diaz, who you and I had talked about, and we were sort of vaguely linked with, but then apparently weren't interested in pursuing at this stage for whatever reason, scored yesterday.
Did he?
And also, Kouani, the Fiorentina player, who we were clearly interested in.
Yeah.
Until they heard we'd sold more pay and wanted more money.
Yeah.
He scored yesterday.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
There's always more we could do. There's always more players we could bring in. Anyway, sorry.
Top clubs always do it, though,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah.
They always bring in new players.
But a great day today, Raymond. Really.
Absolutely.
Next up, we have Julian. Welcome back to the podcast studio.
Hello. Great to be back.
Yeah, and with a smile on your face. Now, why is that?
Well, it's absolutely fantastic, wasn't it? It was scintillating football. You know, first time we scored five in the top division.
Yeah.
You know, I was scratching my head when I was trying to remember if we'd ever done it before.
And we scored six, but...
Well, we did score six, yes, yeah.
But yeah, yeah, I mean,
the minutest details that didn't score that six, yeah.
And we seem to have sorted out our penalty issues now, don't we?
You know, I mean, I'm always worried, you know, that would never stop. But it's a great penalty, straight down the middle.
The making of that was Wolves away. I was there last season, 3-0. And he missed the first one, and he had the balls to take a second one, which is a hell of a lot of balls to do that.
I was at that game as well, yes, yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, that could have gone one or two ways, obviously, like any penalty.
Yeah.
But what happened by scoring that one, that gave him the chance to have the next one.
Yeah.
And because he put that next one in, it started to set the narrative of we might have our settled future penalty taker.
Yes, yeah.
And as long as he's with us, I think he will be now.
I mean, I'm amazed he's like, you know, because, you know, he's obviously played further back and everything like that, but he's still getting the chance to spin.
Yeah.
You know, he came to us with that reputation as a great sort of dead ball specialist.
Yeah.
And we've not seen it, you know. So suddenly we're now starting to see it.
And he hits,
because he's further back.
Yeah. He sort of hits the ball dead weight, doesn't he? He's got that lovely sort of heavyweight touch the way he hits it.
Yeah.
Which is cannonball sort of stuff. It's really difficult to save it on target.
That goal which was ruled out was sort of sensational.
He's a beautiful player to watch. One of my favourites anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now he's got this penalty thing. That's great. Even better.
Yeah.
And scoring from range either with or without a death ball scenario is a great bonus.
I hope we've got him on a long-term contract.
Oh, I hope so too. I think we need to actually renew that.
Yes.
In fact, at this stage. Yeah. So as we look at the Arsenal game, Man U, which is 0-0, by the way. I did say earlier it's 1-0. It got ruled out. You know, Arsenal are on a 100% record. They're on fire. But is there anyone better than us, apart from Arsenal maybe, on paper at the moment?
Yes. Well, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, it's sort of, you know, we're going to be the team to beat, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Fulham gave us a bit of a sort of an awakening, didn't they?
Yeah. Hopefully it's just nothing more than an anomaly in the end, hopefully.
Well, I mean, you know, the fact that we won today, you know, is great. I mean, I was a little bit worried.
Yeah.
Our record against bottom sides is not that great.
We play teams into form, don't we, unfortunately, normally. But and we're at home, which is the weaker of the two options for us.
Yes.
So that was great. That was great.
Yeah, no.
Anyway. Fantastic, Julian. Until the next time when I call you.
Great to be on. Thank you.
Nice to have you on.
Yes.
Cheers.
Yeah,
bye. Okay, next along the production line of a podcast audio snippets, we have, for the first time in quite a few weeks, our old friend, guest contributor, Andy Bravery. Hello, Andy.
Hi there, Ross. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I've had worse days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Another win at home.
Yeah.
And goals. Who needs a forward?
I know.
Who needs a forward?
Exactly. Keep Danny Welbeck fit and we've got all we need. He can go goalless all season and we can keep winning like that and I'll be happy.
Absolutely.
Where did we win this game, do you think? Apart from him scoring goals, obviously. I mean, the midfield, I think, really. And their defence. Their defence is a weak link, isn't it?
It was poor. Their defence was poor.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say... I would say it was one of those games at half-time, you think, oh, there's got to be more goals.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, and then sometimes there aren't.
Yeah.
And then we get a goal.
Yeah.
And it's disallowed. Still, not, I've got an idea why, but I think it's outrageous. And then I think to myself, it looks to me like Potter's gambling. He's gambling on Trossard.
Yeah.
Scoring more than conceding because we were like quite exposed in that left back position. We've really got Webster. I think Webster, you know, felt that at times, but it paid off. Just in my head, when I'm about to take Trossard off, Trossard scores.
Yeah,
so what do I know?
I was calling it as well. I thought we had a quiet first half. Second half started quite quietly as well, and I was called in for a half time Mittimer to come on, give him a longer stretch than he's had in previous appearances, notwithstanding the League Cup, and he didn't. And lo and behold, we go just past the 60 minute mark, and I'm still saying the same thing. Trossard starts to step it on, and we start to get in amongst the goals again.
Exactly, yeah, and he scores. And I think he's going to put it on his right foot, and he scores with his left.
Great finish.
Yeah,
he loves it in the back post, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah,
he really does. Great finish. The odds were against with that shot. You've got it right in the right of the corner. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Andy, it's always a pleasure, sir. We'll leave it as that. We'll have a chat next time.
See you later.
Take care. Cheers. So we've now reconvened to the wonderful Evening Star. It's always wonderful. And it's all the better for bumping into my old mate Tom Hyland, who I used to bump into all the time. Now it's just most of the time. How you doing, Tom?
I'm really good. I mean, you can't be like bad after that game.
As you said, it had everything. A number of goals, a disallowment, there were penalty appeals, one of which was given. As you said, when was the last time there? Well, I'll let you say it.
Yeah, I mean, from the first whistle to the last whistle, it was chaos. When was the last time there was a game that had an opening goal in the opening minute and the final goal in the last minute, in the 97th minute of all as well? I mean, it was what a crazy, crazy game. But I think it's
beautiful crazy, wasn't it?
Beautiful crazy. And last year or seasons before, conceding goal after 45 seconds, heads would go down, the crowd would drop.
Yeah.
But actually, this season, I turned around to my mate and said, do you know what? It's so early that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. The mate next to me said, you know, you don't really mind if you could see that early. It's always the cliche quote, but it's too early to score. Yeah. Which sounds ridiculous, but it often is the case.
100%.
If you score that early, you don't end up winning the game.
100%. But that first 15, 16 minutes where we went from 1-0 down in 45 seconds to 2-1 up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've witnessed a game that crazy at the Amex ever.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. And by the way, Bournemouth will probably disagree with you about scoring that early in after the other week, but that was some game, wasn't it? Anyway, well, we didn't score 9 goals, but we scored 6. 5 of them were allowed. I was just chatting with you off air just now. You just said you've seen the incident back, and it really shouldn't have been ruled out.
Well,
is that right?
So it's one of those, and it's weird seeing a referee go to the monitor for what is effectively an offside call. But, you know, it's one of those that's really hard to take. And I was chatting to some of my mates that were Leicester fans after the game, and they're like, that goal, just for the fact of how good it was and how long the VAR decision was taken, you should not be taking goals like that away from football.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's a player that hasn't even touched the ball, that is naturally moving towards the ball because it's a free kick, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And it gets ruled out. I mean, you know, it's deprived McAllister of the match ball.
Lawfully speaking, it's probably right if it's the right decision. You still want to rule it out, but it feels like there should be a special rule that allows goals. Just if they're good enough, just ignore the rules.
But the whole thing with VAR is it's meant to be clear and obvious.
Yeah.
If it takes four minutes.
Yeah.
To come to a decision, it's not clear and obvious. And bring in a rule that says 30 seconds or you revert to the decision.
The other thing is, it's been traipsed out this argument many times already. The thing about the referee going to the monitor and just vindicating a decision that's already been effectively made. He's going through the motions, isn't he? He's spending, 1 minute at the most, and looking at something they've said 4 minutes out. How is he going to come to a different conclusion?
But this is also a problem. I went to a talk with Jonathan Pearce, the commentator, last season.
Yeah.
And in his talk, he said that the problem with VAR is the VAR is given their opinion and view on the incident.
Yeah.
Whereas that shouldn't happen. They should be referring and saying, you might want to have a look at this.
Yeah.
And then the referee should make the decision.
Yeah.
Because you don't need another opinion and another...
Yeah.
You know,
so what they should, so what you'll say is to not undermine the ref, because it's lip service in the end, isn't it? If he is genuinely going to make a decision independently, as you said, look at it enough to go, have another look, definitely have 3 quick looks and then just go, have a look.
To my mind, every VAR decision should be looked at on the monitor by the on-field referee, other than a clear offside.
Yeah.
Anything that is binary, yes or no.
Yeah.
Fine, deal with it. But anything that is a subjective, a human opinion, the referee needs to be the one to make the decision and needs to go to the monitor.
VAR can have a look to establish that the referee needs to make a decision, but they shouldn't spend ages pondering it and then tell the ref to have a look, because they're always going to back it up, aren't they? Very few exceptions.
Football was so late to adopt video referees. There's so many sports that have learned so much, but football's ignored every learning from other sports.
Yeah.
You look at rugby, the TMO says, there might be something there, have a look. they stop the game, they bring it up on the big screen, the referee looks and says, what
it.
I'm seeing yep. is this, I think it's a penalty kick
yeah.
and a yellow card, do you agree? And yeah. then the TMO says, yes, I agree with that. But at no point does the TMO guide the referee to a decision. Yeah. And that's what it should be in football.
Somehow football, English establishments in general, particularly football, think they know better, don't they?
100%. You look at the MLS. The yeah. MLS has VAR, yeah. but for offsides, they don't use lines, they don't use the mathematical stuff. It has to be a clear offside yeah. for the VAR to overturn.
You do a fairly quick eye test and nothing more.
And let's be fair, as fans, regardless yeah. of if it's for us or against us, we want to see goals in games.
Yeah.
We don't want
yeah.
a boring 0-0 draw.
Again, if it's across the board, that's fine.
Exactly.
Because if we're getting loads of these ambiguous decisions go our way, just as likely that so will other teams. So they'll run the line the same way, there'll be the same levels of opportunity.
100%.
It's
and
fair.
You know, we're back talking about VAR after a game
yeah.
when we just scored five yeah. goals for the first yeah. time in the Premier League. It should have been 6 or 7
exactly.
without VAR or with VAR,
yeah.
however you look at those
yeah.
decisions. And, you know, what a day.
Yeah.
What a day again.
I know, let's get back to the game very quickly because my battery's run out on this
yeah.
phone. I know it's going to cut off soon. But, yeah, overall, fantastic performance, fantastic game. Several things I love about that. First of all, the goals keep coming from different sources and they keep coming from midfield, which is great.
And that was the problem before. People hawk on about we need a striker, we need a striker. Our problem was it goals weren't coming from defensive
midfield. Yeah, exactly. That's it. We're solving that problem. Having Billy Gilmour in, I know he didn't have a huge part to play today, but having him in creates more flexibility in the midfield, which allows more of those goal opportunities.
100%. And also, Alexis McAllister has finally found his role in that team
yeah,
and
yeah.
the tactics this season. Yep. What a player he is.
Yeah.
Become him and Gross this season, and actually Solly March.
Yeah.
Those three players have just stepped up another level. Solly March is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. The finishing is still an issue, but that was always an issue anyway.
But McAllister today,
yeah.
what a player!
And we're solving our penalty taking issue as well, aren't we?
Well, I always say go hard and down the middle because the keeper's got to make
yeah,
a decision.
Exactly.
But
he's gone right, left, and centre so far. So
yeah.
people got to analyse it and go, well, he likes to go right or whatever. He's not. He's going all over the place.
And then, that free kick. Wow.
I knew he was going to score that as well. I had a feeling there was a fifth goal in that, but 15 minutes before it went in, and when it did go in, and when he was shaping up for it to take it, I thought this is going in.
I agree, and
beautiful
I think
goal.
As Albion fans, we just have to pinch ourselves every
yeah.
week at the moment because.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the best team we've ever had. We're playing
yeah.
incredible football. We've got a manager that
yeah.
matches the personality of the club and the team.
Yeah.
And I was saying to someone earlier, before you played Leicester, I think this is, you know, Leicester should probably win it.
Yeah.
But you have to remind yourself that we're actually a good team now.
Yeah. And at the moment, we're a better team than Leicester.
100%.
They've got a number of issues. Unfortunately, their star is in the way, isn't it? They've got a lot of defensive problems. They're still good as an attacking force. They scored 2 goals today, 1 or 2 other chances. But ultimately, they've got players they've lost. Michael was a big loss to them. He might have saved a couple of things today because he's bloody good. They've obviously had issues with centre-back. I've forgotten his name, the Turkish fellow. He doesn't seem to be on the scene. They've now lost Fofana. Tielemans is running down his contract. Vardy's getting past his peak. They're going stale.
And as much as people might be upset that we didn't sign a striker at the end of the window, what
yeah.
we have is consistency.
Yeah.
The reason, I think, for our positive start to the season is you look at the team
yeah.
today and the team that was playing at the end of last season, it's very solid.
Yeah.
It's the same people. The core
yeah.
of the team hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And that
they're
consistency...
just getting better through experience.
Exactly. They're getting older. We've got a very young team. They're getting older. They're getting better. A coach like Potter is bringing the best out of them. And, I think it's such
yeah.
a positive place to be.
You sign really good young players. It doesn't matter they're getting older because they're coming into their peak. That's our policy. We don't sign at too old an age.
And also, I think what this season is showing is actually that whole approach of signing for a season or two ahead.
Yeah.
So the fact is, we signed this season signings a year ago.
Yeah.
And they're now coming in.
Exactly.
And they're showing their worth.
Yeah.
And some of the players that we signed this year that we put out on loan, they'll come in next year, but we're always thinking one step ahead.
Exactly. Plus, we've got a contingency plan for unexpected losses, such as Cucurella. We bring in Estupiñán. So, yeah, it's sorted.
Exactly.
Anyway, this battery's definitely going to die in a second, so we better round off there. Really good to get you on for your debut, but Tom, we've got a long-standing pledge to get you on properly to have in more detail. So we'll get you back on sometime in the coming weeks. It's been excellent having a chat with you. Now we can enjoy these lovely beers in the Evening Star.
I look forward to it. Cheers and up the Albion.
Cheers. And so to the day after, the day before. Looking back, further reflections on the Leicester game. Fantastic 5-2 win, obviously delightful result, brilliant performance, great atmosphere, lots of incident, lots of stuff to talk about, quite a bit of which we have done already. But I haven't done any of that with Peter, who was at the game as well. Welcome back onto the show as usual, Peter. And let's get your thoughts on the game as a whole, first of all, and anything in particular that stood out for you.
I'm intrigued by the fantastic 5-2 win. I mean, is there an occasion when you have a terrible 5-2 win? Is that when we're knocked out in a qualifying round to the Europa Conference League? Well, they don't do away goals anymore, do they? So
you always got some smarmy answer, haven't you?
I thought you could rely on me for that.
It was
brilliant, I thought, generally. I mean, obviously, very slow start in terms of first minute, but then came back from it really well, and it was really encouraging to see us really kind of play. I know Leicester weren't very good, but react to the goal so well and then gifted them another goal out of nothing, really. I mean, it just gave the ball away, and from there it was a well-worked goal, but it was our fault for giving them the back of the ball. We were in complete control at that point. And you kind of think maybe then at that point we've kind of screwed it up and, you know, they're going to kind of get back in the game, and they did it. They probably were slightly better for the rest of the first half, but not much. There wasn't much in it, but it was like kind of they had a little bit more attack. And then, obviously the VAR incident, and I think we came out with gave it a real go for the minute or two that we had, and then we thought again if we were a bit deflated, I think, by that for a few minutes, and then Leicester maybe looked a bit boosted by that, and then from there though, from about the hour mark, we just dominated and we were superb, and it could have anything been more, really.
Yeah, we'll talk about VAR in a moment. But what I would say just quickly about that now is that, I mean, say deflated for a few minutes. I think we had to wait a few minutes for the decision in the first place. And a flippant kind of comment aside, obviously that would have had an effect on the deflation factor.
For Leicester, it was like scoring a goal and getting that goal chalked off, wasn't it?
And they carried on with the who are you chance, which they'd done when they'd gone 1-0 up, which backfired for a second time, as we then went on, as we said, to get the fantastic 5-2 win rather than a lucky one. Actually, we were unlucky not to score more goals. Solly had a shot well saved. We had Danny Welbeck got into a position in the wide area, chipped in, it hit the roof.
Yeah, there's not much been made about their first goal, but I did think I've seen situations where fouls are given for Tielemann shoving into March. You know, you could argue it's shoulder to shoulder. I understand why VAR didn't overrule it. But I've also seen decisions like that given for a barge in the back for slightly rather than... It wasn't as clear as the one at Man U where they somehow managed to miss it. But, you know, I don't think VAR would have overruled it if it had been given as a free kick in a situation sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think Solly in flashes was great, actually, speaking of Solly. He had that shot on target. Of course, he caused the goal. It turned out he didn't score it with his third attempted header on goal in a row, I think, in three games or something. But he did cause the defender to put it to the net at point blank range. Defender had nothing, he knew nothing about it. So it's kind of like a Solly instigated goal, but he can't claim it, unfortunately, for him. So he's still not a new scorer for the season amongst our many. But, he was involved in a lot of what we did well. But I don't think he was...
He got man of the match at the ground, didn't he? But I did not hit anything against Solly, but I would have had said four or five players were high. I mean, McAllister was man of the match for me. Goals were irrelevant. He was brilliant. Closely followed by Grosch, Trossard, Welbeck, Casado, all probably would have gone above Veltman as well, probably above March, probably. Not really played badly, but just because those guys all played really well.
Yeah, I'd go along with all of that. And the general consensus in the chat had post-match in the stadium in the North Concourse was exactly that. McAllister man of the match. Maybe it's the corporate just wanted to get whoever they wanted to get in, pre-arranged agenda. I don't know, because that often happens, doesn't it? You think, really? It's not really the man of the match. Sometimes they get it right. Sometimes they're just coming up with an honest answer. But what, maybe that was their honest answer, but yeah. I don't agree with them.
If they'd given it to any of Casado, Welbeck, Trossard, Grosch, I probably would have been fair enough. But Solly was, I mean, yeah, he just wasn't as good as the rest of them. So, it doesn't mean he never did have a good game. I'm not having a go at him. Just means that, yeah, he wasn't as good as the others.
Yeah. My men of the match, by the way, so far this season, Casado for Man U, Dunk for Newcastle, McAllister for West Ham, Alzate for Forest Green, McAllister for Fulham, McAllister for Leicester. That's for me. And I think it was in a fairly agreeable decision in most cases amongst other people, not necessarily the same answer.
No, I'm not sure I disagree with any of those from, well, having obviously saw the Fulham game on TV and the Forest Green game, heard about what people said. So, I don't agree particularly with any of those.
Three men of the match.
Say for Leeds game?
I think that was Grosch went for.
Yeah. I thought they actually got it right, that one, even though I think in a game where we had so many chances it didn't take them, the guy actually who took the goal probably deserved it in the end.
Yeah, and he's played very well.
He did as well. He had a couple of brilliant through balls. But I'm inclined to say, normally I would say don't give it just to a player for scoring, but when you've had so many chances and missed them all, I'm more inclined to say, we'll give it to the guy who actually put it in the back of the net finally.
And McAllister certainly did in the game yesterday. Three goals on target, one of them disallowed, unfortunately deprived of a hat-trick. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, I mean, three man-of-the-match performances. He's got four goals now as well, because, of course, he got two in this game, and one of which was a penalty. He scored two other penalties this season. We were talking post-match in the stadium about the fact that that's now three in a row this season and four in a row overall that he's buried. So I think we've solved, at least for the time being, our penalty-taking quandaries in terms of who should take them. And I think barring a big upturn or downturn in form, I think he'll carry on doing that now. He's got a sort of like a deadweight sort of touch, kind of real cannonball type of hit, isn't it, we were saying after the game.
And the interesting thing felt to me was, I think we were saying the other day that we put two in different corners, and then now he put one in the middle.
Yeah.
So, exactly. He obviously is varying it, so there's no way of knowing exactly where he's going to go, and which is good. Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing. Unless you can literally guarantee to hit the top corner every time, you need to vary it a bit. And, yeah, it's really, really good to see him do that. And it's great to have not only a penalty taker, but also a free kick taker potentially as well. I mean, we so rarely score from those situations.
Yeah. I mean, of course, his other goal was still a dead ball goal, a great free kick right with the last kick, basically, of the game.
I can't remember if we last scored one of those.
We were just saying, actually, just before it happened, when was the last time we had one? Top bins. I was thinking Pascal Gross was going to take one in the first half, and he ended up, this is going in the corner. No, it's being passed into the corner off the pitch. So I think it was to Solly. Oh, why didn't he take it? He's more of a taker of curling free kicks, but McAllister.
I remember him taking a free kick and scoring for one in probably Potter's first season against someone like Everton or something like that. That might be our last one.
He got seven goals in his first season. He's on 20 goals.
Not his first season, Potter's first season.
Oh, Potter's first season, right, okay, yeah.
But in which case, if that's the case, that might be the last time we scored from a direct free kick.
Yeah. We were saying it had been a while, and as he stepped up to take that kick, I thought, he's going to score this. It felt as if there was a fifth goal coming for about 15 minutes, and it just felt right. It just something about the narrative of the day, I just thought, you know what, he's going to get this. He's going to get a second goal because he deserves at least a second goal. Of course, that would have been a spectacular clinching of a hat-trick if the other goal had been given and that goal was still taken and scored the same way.
Yeah, exactly. You never know what happens if we go 3-2.
I'm pretty pleased for several reasons. A, he got another spectacular goal, having had one deprived. B, the fact, as you said, a first free kick like that for ages. C, I felt we deserved to be at least three goals better than Leicester by the end of the game. And D, it was a chance to get our first five goal offline. Certainly in the Premier League era, the commentators on Sky were saying, first top flight five ever for us. I haven't checked the old record.
I think it is. I think it was.
I think it was overall, I read. Yeah. Speaking of Sky commentary, by the way, thanks Sky for changing the scheduling around. I recorded the match to watch it back, and I have Formula One.
I had exactly that when I got home yesterday as well. Yeah.
And I luckily only started trying to look back through it this afternoon, so I had some time off work, and discovered this disaster, and found out there was actually one of the half-hour reruns of the various games going on early evening tonight, so I was able to catch it and see what they said and have a look at the VAR.
I did exactly the same thing with that as well. Recorded one last night.
Yeah, I mean, that's not good enough, Sky. Up yours.
And it still says it was Brighton against Leicester as well on the listing if you go back.
Yeah. So if you've programmed something in, bloody well show it. I know it was on another channel as well, I think. They sometimes double it. But, you know, really.
Yeah, it's a lesson learned there, isn't it? You always record it on a Premier League channel rather than on the main channel or whatever. But yeah, I had exactly the same thing and I was equally pissed off with it.
It wasn't just me. Well, although I don't want to wish misfortune on you in the recording of TV stakes, but still, there we go. Okay, VAR, time for a rant here. I've only finally got to see it this evening, actually, the actual incident, what the debate was. All I knew was potential interference in play from a player who had been offside by a marginal amount. That's all I'd heard. Had a look back at it now, seen what Mwepu actually did in that incident. He did take a swing towards the ball. I don't know, because I've only seen it recently, I haven't had a chance to ask our ref chums what the state of play is with regard to that. Didn't watch Ref Watch if they talked about it on there.
They did. Dermot Gallagher said it was the right decision.
Okay, right. Well, perhaps so. If that is the right decision, then it's pretty... I don't know what the rule is on it, but if that is the rule, then it's actually clear-cut the other way. They didn't need to take that long to decide that was a disallowed goal.
And once you involve the referee in it, surely it has to be a clear and obvious error.
Because
offsides don't have to be, but it wasn't about the offside. It was about the interference of play. So I mean, to me, that doesn't come... I mean, I moaned about it a lot since we played there, but how on earth you can put a goal that United scored against us against that goal yesterday, and our goal's disallowed, and United's goal's allowed to stand, when Maguire is basically challenging Sanchez, so he panics and pushes it into the canister. Exactly. I mean, how enough that is not interfering with play, but Mwepu getting nowhere near an overhead kick, so the guy headed away, when the guy headed away, is somehow, from a tiny little bit offside, is somehow interfering with play.
I don't understand.
So inconsistent.
Yeah, it is inconsistent. I'm not one to accuse refs of having big club bias, but I'm accusing a ref of having a big club bias.
But you're going to do it anyway.
there was no need for that to take 4 minutes or whatever it was. I was going to count how long it was, but of course I only got the shorter thing. I didn't see how long it actually was in the end, but it must have been four or more minutes.
4.5 minutes was the eventual time.
Anything that takes that long, regardless of the outcome of the decision, is simply too long, and that needs to be eradicated.
There needs to be a minute limit on it. If it's not clear and obvious that it's wrong in a minute, then it's not a clear and obvious error. Whether it's offside, if you're drawing the lines for more than a minute on offside, then it's not an obvious error and it should be allowed. There were no Leicester players complaining. There were no, you know, it's...
I was going to say multiple factors, maybe up to 2 minutes. You know, if there was a debate about a foul, then a possible offside, then an interference of play, then something else. You know, fair enough, then take 2 minutes to look through it all, or whatever, two and a half minutes. But for a single factor situation, which is essentially what this is, the offside was established pretty quickly, I think. Or was it? I don't know. Maybe it wasn't.
I think that took a while as well, seemingly.
Well, that shouldn't take that long because apparently, according to Mike Dean, there's lines are drawn, and if one line doesn't overlap the other...
There seemed to be some sort of issue around the guy who would have been playing Mwepu on wasn't that near him, I think, was the other side, and it was trying to get the line. And also, they always have these issues around when the ball's actually kicked as well, don't they? And they don't seem to ever have fixed it. What confuses me is they claim, or I've not heard any issues about VAR in other countries. I've not heard any issues about VAR at any of the major tournaments. How is it that the English league, the Premier League, fuck it up so massively, and yet everyone else can get it right? Or, you know, not perfectly right, but generally right.
Yeah, I was saying yesterday, well, they always seem to know better or think they know better, and they always do worse than the other introduced.
We were talking about a group earlier, weren't we? I think it's probably a combination of the way we interpret it and go with it, and also the fact that probably our referees are pretty terrible, to be honest.
Yeah. It's deeply infuriating. It doesn't need to take that long. There is one issue, which is the offsides. I mean, I don't know how the Mike Dean thing isn't being decided quicker, because if you can't decide it quickly enough, it's not enough of a gap, and that's where the clear and obvious on the offside should be. If you are going to have some kind of objective thing, and apparently we're getting this semi-auto system that's going into the Champions League this season, to the World Cup in a couple of months' time, and I think to one or two other major tournaments and the Euros later as well, it's going to have some sort of 3D thing where it reads all the bodies on the pitch. It can read much more carefully much more instantaneously where they are on the pitch. And there's a sensor in the ball which will negate this problem of the exact frames per second thing. If all of that technology works, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with it, that will apparently make it instantaneous in establishing, at least as the system is doing, whether it's offside or onside. So you'll have a black and white thing, at least as far as the system goes. That would help, because it would speed things up. Then you can spend all of the time that you want to spend, which should be no more than a minute for a single factor issue, on establishing, you know, if the player did try and play the ball and played the opposition onside, or if it was a foul or interfering with play, or whatever other factors might be involved. Because I think taking that long on an offside itself, before you start looking at another incident related to this, in this case, Mwepu trying to take an overhead kick, then, you know, it's just too long.
I agree. Yeah. And I think based on what I've seen and what the decisions have been made this season, I think they made the wrong decision with us.
Yeah.
But I think given the rules, they made the right one, but given the interpretation of rules and what they regard as a frame of play these days.
Yeah.
Which I think is a stupid one anyway. Then I think they probably did just about get it right. But they haven't been doing that consistently, e.g. Maguire against us. It's pretty fair that we could be pissed off about it, because if you're not getting it right, I mean, the same way, you know, you could argue, I think that both decisions that Leicester got against them for corners last year were right, in that Barnes had interfered with play, but actually then they're very rarely given. So I understand why their fans were pissed off last year, because they aren't given. So, everyone claimed that VAR was going to bring more consistency. I say, if anything, it's actually made less consistency.
Yeah, because I mean, we haven't got time to get into it here. We've got to wrap up in a second. But there was a number of incidents in other games at the weekend. There's been issues at Leeds with the Newcastle game, with the West Ham game, where people are fuming. The Leeds incident, where a guy was fouled in episodes and culminating in finally in the penalty area. And I think if you haven't given a foul and you carry on fouling someone, it goes over the penalty box line. That should be a penalty, not only a foul. You wave play on, apparently. I haven't seen the highlights of that game yet, but I've just seen the incidents in isolation. And, those things need to be changed. Yeah. But delightful result.
Very good result. We're very, very happy with it. And, we've been disastrously now. We go to Bournemouth with a chance to go top again, which,
oh no,
you know what that means.
Against a team that's been struggling. Yeah.
Well, but we also have a dreadful record against.
I know. Yeah. Well, it's about time that changed, as far as I'm concerned. We will go top if we win, because I think we're playing before the other side.
Yeah.
And City have got Tottenham who did the double.
But a win will move us up at least one position.
Yeah. Guaranteed one position if we win, could be over both of them. And I've got a pretty strong feeling that'll be a draw, that game, actually. But we've got to do our bit. That's the main thing. I don't think either of us are going to that match, are we?
I am, yeah.
We were going to Bournemouth. Oh, yeah, brilliant. So we'll get first-hand view on that after the game, I'm sure. For this episode, though, we've got to wrap it up a little bit now, because we're doing our Seagulls Over London Zoom chat next. So I shall see you on there in a moment, Peter. Cool. And for our listeners, thank you for joining us as always. We'll be back with the next one, which will no doubt be a review of the Bournemouth game, unless anything dramatic happens in the meantime. So until then, stand or fall.
Up the Albion.
So we were just about to publish the episode covering all the post-match reaction and our post-match review from the game of the weekend and our glorious win. However, there's some much more worrying news has come out today, Wednesday, the 7th of September. That news is that following another defeat for Chelsea in the Champions League at Dinamo Zagreb, 1-0. Thomas Tuchel has been sacked. Seems a pretty harsh or very quick reaction. Reading an article in The Athletic, it sounds as if there's a few areas of dissatisfaction that have been growing for a while, and the club have claimed that this isn't a knee-jerk reaction. It's been in the offing for a while, and this just was the breaking point. However, the timing of that breaking point and the timing of that decision could not be worse. From a Chelsea point of view, they've just spent about £260 million in the transfer window, and within days, they've now got to change manager. And whoever that new manager is going to be is going to have to work with players he may not necessarily have thought would fit into his style or into his model of operation. However, it's also pretty bad timing for the Albion because, of course, pretty inevitably, it's no surprise at all, they're interested in Graham Potter. They are also interested in Mauricio Pochettino and Zinedine Zidane, who are both free agents at the moment. However, Graham Potter appears to be their first choice target. As the morning has the story has developed, news that Chelsea were planning to formally approach us. They have done that. This is on the morning that we're having photo shoots with Graham and the team at the stadium. So pretty bad timing from that point of view as well. But anyway, the formal approach apparently has been made. The club, in line with their usual policy, have given permission for Graham to speak to the club, to Chelsea, which is the typical kind of pathway policy that they have. They'll allow players to step on if they want. It is now down to Graham whether he wants to take that job. There is a buyout clause, so to speak, a release clause, which is reported to be somewhere in the region of 15 or 16 million. So that will be coming our way if he did move. Chelsea presumably are willing to meet that. They've got the money, and the fact that the talks are taking place means surely they must have agreed to that. So he is now, as we speak at, or as I speak, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on his way up to London, we understand, to have those talks with Todd Boehly, the owner of Chelsea, who's been in charge for about 100 days. This would be his first, well, this will be his first appointment, whoever it is, having inherited Thomas Tuchel. Tuchel, of course, has won Champions League, Super Cup, a good record in the short period of time. The one bit of analysis on his side is that the first 50 games, they conceded 24 goals. And in the next 50, which he's just completed last night, they conceded, I think it's something like 56 goals or something. 53, I think it might be. So something defensively has gone wrong. I think we can say that, safely say that's partly to do with Rudiger moving on. They couldn't do anything about that at the time. There's been a bit of upheaval. Boehly apparently wants to form a longer-term model rather than being the trigger-happy, almost Galactico-style of ownership, which has gone before with Roman Abramovich throwing money at stuff but changing managers willy-nilly. It seems he wants to go into more of a long-term project, which you could say aligns with Manchester City and Liverpool. It makes sense, therefore, that he might go for someone like Graham Potter, who is all about that kind of thing. Graham hasn't got any Champions League experience, but he is very ambitious. I'm sure he would want to take a top six job relatively soon, if not very soon. That's what we're about to find out, how soon, because Chelsea, there's two things about that. One, you've got the history of Chelsea with sacking managers. That might play on his mind. But I do think, and I fear, that Todd Boehly will be there purely and at pains to convince him that this is a new wave, a new regime, and although they've sacked Thomas Tuchel in fairly harsh circumstances, that wasn't their man. Whoever is this first manager appointed in this next few days is going to be their first man. And that's the important, crucial ingredient which makes me worry that he is going to take it. If it was still Roman Abramovich, I'd be confident that he would turn the job down because there will be other opportunities. In my ideal world, and I would imagine Man City's as well, Graham goes on to great success for 3, 4, maybe even 5 years with us. He then inherits the Manchester City squad and the job there from Pep, who might want to stand down at around that time. That's what I'm imagining would be the perfect scenario from a Brighton point of view, possibly from a Man City point of view, because I think by then he would have had European experience to bring to the party. At this stage, he doesn't have that, but Chelsea appear to be making a gamble on that element. I don't really see it as a risky gamble if they do go for him, or if they do get him. It's in the balance. The vibe is that the club are not confident that he will turn it down. It looks like it might happen quickly. There's been some discussions on some of the WhatsApp groups that I've been on talking about how this would take time. Dan Ashworth took time, and I agreed with that. But on further thoughts, really, it could be a clean break. This isn't the Dan Ashworth scenario. I imagine the Albion have animosity for the Newcastle model, for the ownership model. They probably have an objection to them. They may have been less willing to deal with a club like Newcastle, who are seeking to step past where we're at the moment. With this, it's a matter of not standing in the way of someone going further up the, further up the hypothetical table anyway. They are literally below us in the table at the moment. However, we'll wait and see. There will be further updates, I'm sure, on this during the course of the day, but we've got to finish this podcast somewhere. So I'm going to finish it by saying I'm hopeful, but I'm not confident that he's going to turn it down. And by the time you hear this, he may already have gone. And I think, contrary to what I first thought on hearing it, I think maybe he could be in place by the weekend if he is convinced enough by what the Chelsea ownership say. If he does really want the job, genuinely wants it, doesn't mind the upheaval of moving or whatever else is involved, and if he doesn't have enough reservations about the completion of the job he's doing at the Albion, then I think he'll be off. And then in that case, there's no point dillying and dallying. We'd rather, if it is happening, have it happen sooner rather than later, so we can plan as soon as possible for this season. Very, very annoying if it does happen for Albion fans, because this has the potential, and I'm confident if Graham Potter was in charge, it would fulfil that potential of being our best ever season. In terms of position in the table, beating ninth, I'm confident that would happen if things remained in the status quo. But also, it's going to cause some upheaval. I'm worried how much it might cause upheaval. You know, a lot of young players are getting opportunities. We've got new signings that have come in. Different people might have different ideas. It will cause a problem. It will cause us to not finish as high in the table. How much of a detrimental effect that will have, who knows? Could be very minimal. We have succession planning, as we all know. We have plans in place for these eventualities. And I'm sure as hell know that of all people in our setup and on our staff, Graham is the one we're probably the most worried would go, and probably were the most confident, I suppose you could say, would happen sooner rather than later. So the succession planning is who we've got in mind, how available they might be, how soon, I guess to an extent what it would cost to get that particular coach in if he's otherwise employed at the moment, although of course we'd have money from Graham Potter leaving if that's the case. But that's all a discussion for another day. Let's wait and see what happens, and fingers crossed for what I wouldn't call a miracle, but a very unlikely scenario of him turning it down. We'll see. Anyway, for the time being, stand or fall, up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.